You're listening to Highland Radio.
Good morning. You're welcome along to the weekend edition here on Highland Radio, our first of 2015. In our latest crime slot, Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace has a warning for business owners following a number of recent well-organised burglaries. We've local reaction to Lucinda Creighton's new no-name political party. The Irish Coast Guard had a record number of call-outs in 2014. We'll speak to its director about that. And Jessica Peoples, a fitness instructor and dietitian, has some advice for us for 2015. Plenty more in the programme, including your calls, comments and requests. Call us now, 074-9125000. You can text us, 086-7700-555. Or if you're on Twitter, tweet me directly if you wish, at Greg Hughes. Okay, just a reminder, text 086-7700-555, a very important aspect of the show. Of course, your opinions at home or at work or wherever you are today. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio to reflect on the news in general by former Mayor of Donegal and former County Councillor, Cora Harvey. From a media perspective, I suppose, Cora, we've dusted off the cobwebs and brought you back out. It's great to have you in studio.
Yeah, thanks very much, Greg, and thanks for the invitation for coming here today.
It's not the first one, is it, Cora?
Well, no, it's not. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make other requests, so I wanted to grace you with my presence today.
Exactly. I mean, we'd be foolish to think that since you stood down from the council that your life would be quieter. Generally, it turns out to be quite the opposite, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, and many people would say that to me, you know, what do you do with your time now that you've stepped down or you're not in the council anymore? And I'd be saying, do you know what? I'm busier than ever.
Yeah.
And I wonder, how did I have time to do it all in the first place? I think just life in general takes over with work and family and childcare and all that goes with life for everybody, you know? So you end up, you do fill up your time with various activities and I suppose a lot of the sporting activities too with the children. That takes up a lot of time.
Yeah, especially weekends when I'm asking you to come on this program.
Yeah.
Do you miss the local authority?
To be honest, no, I don't. I don't miss it at the moment because my life has been filled up with other activities. I mean, at the beginning when I stepped down, yeah, I was sort of, you know, wanting to keep involved and keeping my head and what was going on. But as time went on, you kind of tune out. Obviously, around the local elections, you get back, you get enticed up again and you want to become involved. So you help out wherever you can. But listen, you know, listen to the radio and hearing what's going on. You always keep, you know, a little bit of an interest in it. But I do sometimes miss the hustle and bustle and kind of being in the mix of
it. That's one way to describe it, the hustle and bustle. Yeah. And you had the honour that very few of us will have, and that's to have been the mayor, which is something no one can ever take away from you.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I suppose that was down to the other members that was there at the time, you know, that voted for me to become mayor, and with the vote that I got in my own Stranorlar area at the time. You know, look, it was a good honour at the time, but I mean, I won't deny it was a very difficult time. I took a year out of work and I put my heart and soul into it, and it really threw me in at the thick, at the deep end, which probably shaped my opinion of politics overall, to be honest with you, because had I not done that, I may not have seen what it was like to be in politics full time, and that may have formed my decision later in life then to step down, you know.
Do you have any aspiration to re-enter politics? And I know politics is one of those never say never things, but where you see yourself at now, because a lot of people would have an awful lot of respect for you and have thought you'd, you know, you were a very good public representative, so you were well capable of doing it. But do you have any intention of maybe doing it again into the future, or maybe heading for an office above the council?
Oh, God, thank you. You know, I suppose that's something that does come into your mind because people do ask those questions off you now and again. And, you know, when I did step down, people were disappointed. Others understood quite rightly why I did. And the thought does enter my mind every now and again.
Every now and again doesn't sound too positive.
When I say, you know, as you say, never say never, at the minute, it's not my immediate future. But I'm still young. Well, young enough. So look, down the line, maybe five, 10 years.
Life changes, doesn't it?
Life changes. Ages and stages for children. Yeah, absolutely. So I would never say never, but it's not my immediate plan.
Now, I have to ask you, because, you know, it's an obvious kind of a question, and then we'll talk about the newspapers and stuff. But, you know, when you decided to step away from the council, it reduced the number of women on the council even further. You know, there's a lot of men in that chamber. The Donegal's 50% men, 50% women, exactly. And some of the reasons you've given for stepping away from politics are probably what the problem is. How are we going to increase representation? Because it's essential, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And that was, I mean, that was one of the things.
You left poor Marie Therese on her own.
I know, poor Marie Therese. But she's well capable, I'll tell you. She's in there battling away. But no, that was one of the things that really kind of deterred me from stepping down, because I thought, I don't want to do that. And, you know, during my year as mayor, I had kind of been very active around promoting women in politics. And then I felt like, God, here I am now stepping down.
Proving that maybe there is an issue with it.
Yeah, and there is an issue. And I mean, I think it's more so to do with, it's our own pressure, really. And it's the pressure I put on myself as a mother, you know, wanting to be there for my own children. And also, it's, look, at politics, it's an unfriendly place, you know. And you have to, you know, be really, really 100% committed. And if you have your time devoted elsewhere, well, then it doesn't make it easy. And I suppose the childcare is an issue. Now, I was blessed, and I'm not just saying this, but, you know, I had good support at home. Others may not have that.
Well, particularly for the year as mayor, it would have been essential, wouldn't it?
That's it. And I mean, you know, it's not a 9-to-5 job. Do you know, it certainly is not. And I was just thinking there over Christmas, how relaxed it was and how totally tuned out. And I thought back to 2-3 years previous when we had the big freeze and I would have been mayor in one of those years, and every phone in the house was beeping and going off, and it was so hectic. And then trying to get things done for people that maybe you were not able to deliver, and it was your neighbours up the road or somebody in a back road and you knew where they lived. We thought, I can't get that sorted for them today. Mm. You know, so it was all that type of pressure that not just women feel, men feel that in politics as well. But I suppose what I'm saying is you need to kind of be able to give it that 100% commitment. And I did when I could, but for me, my children were at a young age, and
your life first, and I think a lot of people would understand that. But how do we address that going forward? That's the big thing, and there's been a lot of talk about it, and I don't think anyone's come up with a solution. You know,
I don't think so, unless people, you know, have the luxury of making it a full time job and do it 9-to-5 and put every effort into it, and then get the supports around them. But
but politics at the moment is such a thankless job in any case, why would you make those sacrifices to make your life even more difficult? But anyway. What's in the papers today? You had a chance to have a brief look through them.
Brief look. I suppose what's covering most of the papers in today is Lucinda's new party. It's in every paper that I've opened up. I suppose yesterday, well, it wasn't really her launch, but it was her media, you know.
There's a peculiar kind of a thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, you know. And I was sort of surprised at her, because I would view Lucinda as quite articulate. She's a very smart woman. A bit naive in some sense, because here she's trying to launch this party with no name and no policies. And she stepped away from Fine Gael, and we all know the reasons behind that. But I suppose let's be clear, you know, had that issue not happened, she would still be in Fine Gael and she would still be promoting their policy. So I'm not too sure how she's going to lose that label over the next number of weeks or the next number of months. And I mean, look, fair play to her in one sense, because I mean, she knows what it's like in politics, as a woman in politics, and trying to create this new movement in the middle of everything else. I mean, she's going to have her work cut out for her. And it does kind of, you know, raise the question for me, or, you know, the rise of independence. And why would she try to form a new party? Does she not believe that independence can make it? Does she not believe that independents are strong enough, you know, in the chamber? So she's trying to create a party, you know.
Well, particularly looking at social media, which I think, you know, it kind of has its finger on the pulse of the broader opinion, I think. And a lot of people are saying, well, this is just the same, only different. Why would, we don't need another political party. The whole issue with Irish politics at the moment is the, you know, political party. And that's why we've seen the rise of independence. And then when she's asked questions about abortion and other issues and conscious issues, I suppose you could say, it's like, well, she's very ambiguous in her answers. And that's not really what you should be launching on day one, is it? You want people to know what they would be voting for potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the four founding principles that's in the papers, you know, nobody's going to disagree with those. They're very vague. They're very, I suppose it's something that everybody, individual or, you know, political parties would aspire to achieve. But, I mean, look, I suppose the whole thing about political parties is that element of leadership, and she's aspiring to be a leader. So when you have the leader, you obviously have to have your own followers. But she's not given anybody anything to follow yet. So I know she would say it's early days and it's work in progress, but I'm just not too sure why she's going with
this.
What
do you think of Eddie Hobbs' involvement? I mean, he's been on the sidelines as a commentator. I mean, is it good that he's in there now?
Well, I mean,
talking the talk, but he wouldn't even confirm whether or not he's actually going to stand for election. So it's more unanswered questions. Yeah, I mean, what's he doing there? You know,
I mean, I suppose he had sort of indicated that yes, he possibly may run.
That's a politician's answer, isn't it?
Of course. So there you go. He's probably on the way in, but I mean, he's kind of the rabbit out of the hat. There's probably a few more to come out. She needs a few big names in there as well to get people to follow. She says she has, 100 tight group. Be interesting to see who else follows through, you know. There will be various councillors around the country that, you know, that will want to maybe form part of a party if they're sitting in independent seats. You know, she may have something to offer them, but it would be, you know, I agree with a lot of what other people have said at the minute, reading through the papers, that it's going to be more of the same.
And you just wonder, you know, in reality, and I'm not being sort of heavy-handed on Labour, the likelihood is after the next election they will be pretty much annihilated. Is this new unnamed party going to be the next small party that will probably end up being eliminated in the next government, as we've seen with the PDs and so on and so forth?
Yeah, that's quite possible.
Right, you tuned to the Weekend Edition here on Highland Radio, 25 minutes past 10. We're looking through today's news with former Mayor Cora Harvey, and you, of course, listening wherever you are, text the programme 086 770 0055 is the something you think we should be talking about, or to comment on what we are. Or you can call us to an 074 91 25000. Yvonne is waiting to take your call, and we're looking through the papers, which are kindly sponsored by Kelly's Centra, the Mountaintop in Letterkenny. Back in 2 minutes. Cora Harvey's looking through the papers with us. Cora, what's caught your eye next? The Daily Mail there, is it?
Yeah. On page 10, it's the story of Cormac McAnallan. 10 years since the GAA Golden Boy, Cormac McAnallan, became the first high-profile victim of the sad sudden adult death syndrome. You know, this caught my eye because I suppose, you know, Cormac's legacy still, you know, lives on. And I remember that time, you know, very clearly when he died so suddenly, and the grief that it cost, you know, across the GAA circles, across the country. You know, his mum here speaks, you know, very openly, and she speaks about the pain and the grief that's left behind. But hopefully, you know, what has happened to him, the fundraising that has been done since that, the trust, the Cormac Trust, has provided over 200 defibrillators to sports clubs across the...
That was really the catalyst for that, wasn't it, Cora? No matter who it is, it's tragic, but because of his high profile name, that is when the whole debate about defibrillators and getting them out into sports grounds and what have you, that really was the catalyst for that. Do you think families take comfort from that, that... you know, it's in his memory, that the awareness and the fundraising has...
Well, certainly, you know, according to his mum here, it has, because, you know, she's feeling that he hasn't died in vain. And I suppose that's a very gracious way to look at the loss of a son. You know, I suppose when somebody that has a high profile passes away for any reason, you know, they had a voice, so their family can still use that profile to create awareness, you know. It could be very easy just to kind of hide away under the covers and forget about it and, you know, and grieve lonely. But you know, they have used this to try and raise awareness, which is, you know, it's a very humble
thing. And it keeps his spirit alive as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely, you know. So, you know, hopefully there has been more, I suppose, fatalities on soccer fields or Gaelic fields, you know, across the country. But at least this is, it's reaching out to a lot of other young children and adults.
And I have no doubt whatsoever, and I'm not sure if it's contained within the article, but you can be sure that other families who've been bereaved since have networked with Cormac's family in it, and I suppose with them putting their name out there, they're offering their support to other people who've lost loved ones.
Well, that's
in the same way.
That's the networking of it, you know, and that's where the trust was formed, and then the finances were raised, you know, for that. So it's a source of comfort as well. As also, you know, a source of raising funds for this.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, what's next there, Cora?
What is next?
Do you know what I might ask you about, actually, before we do? There's been a lot of hoo-ha on... Channel 4, they've decided to make a sitcom, would you believe, based on the Great Famine, the Great Irish Potato Famine. I don't know if you heard this, Cora. The station's developing Hungry, it's called. It's a comedy along the lines of hit show Shameless, set during the starvation of 1.5 million Irish in the mid 1800s. Almost 3,000 outraged viewers in Britain have already signed a petition urging the station to call a halt to the project. It states that famine or genocide is no laughing matter. Approximately 1 million Irish people died and another 2 million were forced to emigrate because they were starving. Any programme on this issue would have to be a serious historical content, not a comedy. A Channel 4 spokesperson told the newspaper, it's not unusual for sitcoms to exist against the backdrop of a tragedy. Channel 4 commissioning a comedy based during the Great Famine.
Yeah, you could try and see both sides there, but I would tend to agree with the seriousness of it. You know, when you hear of a sitcom, you automatically think, you know, light entertainment, like comedy. I don't think there's so much comedy about the Irish family.
No, because, you know? I mean, they might point to older, maybe programmes like Hello, Hello that were based during a war, whatever, but there was one net result of the famine, and that was a massive loss of life. But they seem to be going ahead with it. I'd be very surprised to see how, curious to see how they think they're going to actually approach that, but it seems a peculiar one. Listeners, what do you think? 086-7700-555, Channel 4's plans to base a sitcom during Phantom Times. Kira, what have you got there now?
The next thing that caught my
attention. Cora, I beg your pardon. I called you Kira.
Oh, you're okay.
Do you get that a lot?
I do.
Sorry.
And a lot worse.
I'll not ask. Go on.
Page 17, again in the Daily Mail, donor plea as number of transplants plunges.
Yeah. 67 was it last year? Something like that?
Yeah, 67 last year. But this is specifically around the kidney, the Irish Kidney Association. But the interesting thing about this article is that the actual amount of donors hasn't gone down, which I thought initially it had.
Right.
Because people tend to, for some reason the donor cards are not being used as much maybe as it should be. There's a bit of more networking or advertising needs to be done around that. But they had enough donors and they had enough patients, but it seems to be more down to the lack of resources and infrastructure.
Wow, that's
which is very sad.
For all the work that's been done to promote donor cards and people carrying them, and then obviously if it were me, you know, you have to consult your family and come up with that decision. And if we're not able to utilise that resource because of a lack of resources, that's something that really needs to be looked
really
at, isn't it?
You know, so it's a small article, but something just caught my attention because I thought, wow, you know, there's more need to be done about this. But then when I read into it, it was more about the actual infrastructure of the hospital and the lack of resources, which is sad, which is something that really, really needs to be looked at, you know. Moving on now as well to the weekend, the Irish Times, there's an article about why we need to teach our children that it's okay to fail. And that caught my attention. Being a mother of two young children and those been into sport and Irish dancing. And it's made up around how we sometimes can pump up our children too much and trying them, encouraging them to win. And why we need to do that, but it's also we have to let them know that it's okay if they don't win.
How do we do that though, Cora? Because, you know, the whole ethos of sport it's an interesting one though. We'll talk about it more seriously in a moment. But, you know, even sometimes, you know, if you watch some of these reality shows on TV, and parents looking on at their children or young adults, as they often are, say it was the X Factor or something like that there, and they clearly have average talents. But the parents then are blinded maybe by their love for their children or something like that there. And I'm sure that translates into sport and what have you locally. And that maybe you know, parents have rose coloured glasses on sometimes with their children.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, you have to kind of, you know, remember it as a sport. Mm. Okay, it's nice to win. It is about winning. But the main point of this is taking part and children being socialised and working as part of a team in any sport that they play in. But also the issue of Irish dancing was discussed in this very briefly. And that's something that I would have a wee bugbear about. My own daughter does do Irish dancing, but she's just at a small level, so there's no big fancy wigs or costumes or anything. But it really irks me when I go to some of these fascias and you see the design and the fancy costume.
Is it as bad as it used to be?
Oh, it is.
Because do you remember this hit the headlines maybe five, 6, 7 years ago? And I know it does come up then sort of infrequently, but there was an awful lot of pressure. We were talking like maybe thousands of pounds for dresses. Fake tan was also an issue there as well. It's still that.
It's still
But that's
still
part
there.
Of the judging process, isn't it?
It is, but you
and
see,
that's the problem.
And parents do, you know, conform to that. And I can understand why, because probably when my daughter, if she ever gets to that stage, for her to take part, you'll have to have the dress, you'll have to have the wig. But unless people all together say, oh, hold on a minute, I'm not going to do that. That's only when you begin to get change. The Irish Dancing Commission, I think it was back 2 years ago, made a ruling that any child under 10 shouldn't wear fake tan. Mm. I mean, under 10. Like, that should have been at least 16. Like, that was maddening to see that, you know, and it caused a bit of an uproar at the time. But it's the industry, it's how they make their money. There's vested interests between the judges and the wigs companies and the costume companies, you know. And, I mean, at the end of the day, it really takes away from the beauty of Irish dancing.
And of course it is. I'm always uncomfortable seeing young people, particularly, well, it's girls, let's be honest. I was going to try and make it asexual, but I was going to say boys as well, but look, it's girls with the fake tan and with the wigs on at 9, 10 and 11. I don't know, it's just, it doesn't seem right to me, do you know what I mean? It seems like you're pushing them too early. But if it's part of the scoring process and if that's what's, you know, it needs a root and branch change, but there doesn't seem to be the appetite there to actually do what's required.
And that's funny though, because, you know, I agree with you, but, you know, from talking to parents, maybe at fascias, they all agree with what I'm saying, with what you're saying. Mm. But, you know, so I don't know what it's going to take or who it's going to take to kind of challenge that and put maybe, I don't know, is it motions under their regulation?
What do the children think, though? You see, maybe it is their thing. I mean, maybe, you know, there's no harm in it. Maybe, you know, if you mentioned your daughter there, if she wants to sort of do that and she's happy and that's what all her friends are doing, do you want to stand in the way of that either? Do you know what I mean? That's the dilemma, you know.
Well, I mean, she'd love to get into a fancy dress.
Yeah, so,
absolutely.
You know, maybe
but
we're
I mean,
being a bit...
No, but the dress is okay. It's the fake tan and the wigs that I have a problem with, you know, and it's around the tradition of the dresses if you keep to that level. But I mean, a lot of parents and families do be put off, and I know parents who have taken their children out of Irish dancing because they couldn't afford to continue that competitive lifestyle, and they also weren't comfortable with the way the competitions were going, you know. So there is a lot of people out there who genuinely disagree with the way that competition is going, but it's just because it's such a mass movement of it, it's who's going to challenge that?
Yeah. Well, let's flip it to the other side then. And girls play sport. I'm not saying for a second they aren't, but say the young fella, not yours, any young fella, is going out playing football, rugby or something. He maybe is going to insist that he has the Nike boots or whatever that are the same for all of his mates. They're 80, 90 quid, I don't know. The shin pads, will they have to be branded as well? You know, and the kit bag and all that kind of stuff. And it adds up into the hundreds. It's the same kind of pressure there too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But it's the money, the cost is significantly different, though, I have to say.
Yeah, true.
And, you know, as young boys grow up, I mean, my boy's excuse is his feet are growing. So he keeps getting a bigger size and a different colour, you know, so that works for him. That'll stop.
Every time the kit changes, he grows a bit.
He grows a bit, yes.
He just walks around stretching his back a bit more. It's the weekend edition with me, Greg Hughes. The first one of 2015. And I'm in studio here with former mayor Cora Harvey. Cora, Michael Graney's funeral takes place in Cavan County Cork today. His wife's funeral took place yesterday. The two daughters, one of which were injured in the stabbing incident by the husband, which cost the wife, which took his wife's life before he took his own. It's an incredibly sad story, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's a tragic story. I mean, I suppose really, you know, when you read a story like that and you hear about it on the radio and TV, you know, words beat you. You can't really describe the emotion, you know, that you feel reading that and looking at that. And I mean, my heart just goes out to the young daughters that are left. I mean, they're burying both parents and in such tragic, tragic circumstances. And unfortunately, it's circumstances like this, you know, it's happening way too often in, in Irish life at the moment, you know.
And there's an investigation because Mr. Graney had been released from HSE care in the last couple of months and had been assessed a number of times. I think I've a feeling there are going to, there's still going to be more questions than answers.
Oh, I would say so. And there's very little about the, you know, about the around that, you know, what actually happened. The newspapers don't cover it, and I suppose rightly so, because it's only going to lead to speculation, which isn't helpful.
Well, there was
the
some
families,
very
you know?
Unsavoury headlines in the day after that tragedy, so it's no harm to see perhaps the papers taking a step back and see how it progresses.
I think so, because, you know, I mean, as I say, the circumstances are fairly, you know,
and I just feel so much for the daughters, you know, they're in such a difficult position. I'm sure they love both parents and now they have to deal with this. And we'll finish up, if you don't mind, Cora, with news we carried today that parents need to earn up to €30,000 a year to cover the cost of childcare for two children. This is according to the Irish Independent. In Letterkenny, the report found it costs €715 to keep a nine-month-old baby in a creche, while a baby and a three-year-old toddler collectively cost €1,200. This is per month. That's if both parents are out to work, or if it's a single parent family, one of them has to go to work. That's a massive wall for anyone to climb over to go to work to try and earn enough to cover those costs.
It's staggering. It really, really is. And it's crippling. I mean, people go out to work and look, they want to pay what they can, you know, for their children to be looked after, and people will generally, you know, look around and want to get somewhere decent and use babysitters that they trust, you know. And it's a double-edged sword, because the cost, the standards of childcare facilities have really increased, and childcare workers are being probed and have to study further and reach certain criteria and standards to work in these facilities. But for the actual parents then paying these costs, I mean, this is only the childcare costs. This doesn't take into account the diesel costs, you know, the other expenses that are incurred by parents working full time who have to use childcare.
Well, if you look at it, right, say for instance, you know, we'll just use an example where it was a mum, dad and two children, and mum wants to go back to work. It's €300 per week, just to look after two children. Yeah. So how much do you have to earn before it's justifiable? The talk about a grant, I don't know how doable that is. Avril McMonagall, McMonagall indeed, is of the Donegal Childcare Committee. Avril, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
These figures, I mean, they're nothing new, and everyone has to make a wage, but it just goes to show how much parents need to be making to be able to actually afford childcare in this county and country.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. I mean, as you say, this is nothing new. We commissioned a report back in early 2013 around the cost of childcare, and we actually identified this as a major barrier to parents being able to return to paid employment. Suffice to say, there's been little or nothing done about it since. There's been lots of more reports. Our report would be the only one in the Irish context, which came as a fully costed proposal to the issue. And there's a lot of confusion in the area in terms of what parents want and what childcare services want. And I think this has added to the fact that very little has been done. But yeah, I mean, we would have showed an average figure of in and around 16,500 for full-time childcare for two children. And if you look at that, if you equate that to the average working wage within County Donegal, as an example, it's just not doable for families once they have their second child.
And the reality of that, the net result of that, is people stay at home, perhaps, you know, are claiming benefits, because there's literally no point in going to work. Because as Cora was pointing out there, by the time you put on the diesel and petrol costs to go to and from the creche, you know, you can add another 2 grand onto the 16.
Yes, Exactly. And I mean, I suppose it's fair to point out at this stage as well, this is not that creches are making huge amounts of money, because that is not the case. Mm-hmm. It's a very work intensive and resource intensive sector that we're in terms of high staff ratios for children, especially mm-hmm. very, very young children. So they have brought costs back as much as they can. And in fact, prices have not gone up in probably the last 6 or 7 years.
So what's the solution then? There's talk of there's calls on the government to introduce a capitation grant to creches. Is that something you would support?
Yes, I mean, higher investment in creches is definitely needed in childcare services across the board. There's no doubt about that. But I mean, I would have a slight problem with that as being the only solution, because I think it's very one dimensional. What we need is a package of proposals here. I would support a tax credit support for parents, where parents can avail of tax relief, because I mean, you can avail of tax relief for a wide range of things. Why not childcare? But also, that's not saying that's the only reform needed. We also need higher investment in childcare. We need to look at opening up our childcare services to the likes of non-regulated childminders. And if we had a similar problem in the north of Ireland probably about 10 years ago, whereby we had a high number of unregulated childminders working in the sector. And when the government brought in a tax relief system, that almost cured that overnight.
Right.
Because what happened was that if you were a parent and you were working, you could only access a childcare service and gain your tax credit if you were using a regulated service. So that provided an incentive for the non-regulated sector to come under the regulated sector, which is a huge problem for us here in Ireland at the moment, with only 1% of childminders being regulated. So you know, it's not as simple as just saying, let's pour more money into creches. Whilst that's needed, we need a package of reforms that are multidimensional and solve a number of our problems together.
Yeah, indeed. Listen, I really appreciate you coming on, Avril, this Saturday morning. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome, Greg.
Thank you indeed. Corey, yeah, exactly. You know, I think you were agreeing with an awful lot with Avril has to say. And I suppose finally, there's a lot of grannies and granddads are saying so much for my retirement, because they're facilitating, and I'm sure they're delighted to as well, but they're facilitating a lot of people getting back into the workforce, because...
Well, that's it. You see, and you know, while parents may pay their childcare costs if they're attending regulated creches, I mean... You know, parents then also will have to give, you know, will give granny and granda a few euro or a neighbour or trying to, you know, for those that are helping them out. And I mean, you know, a lot of people do who work night duty, you know, shift work, you know, single parents, you know, they can't avail of the typical.
But what I can't understand, you know, is if you're paying someone, if you're having to support someone through social welfare, why the decision maker, maybe I look at this too simply, why the decision makers can't say, right, we're giving this person this much, mm-hmm. but if we gave that money instead to a creche, as an example, well, then we'd get more money back through regular taxation. I know that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but surely that's the way we should be doing it.
I know.
You offset one against the other, and then you end up taking in more because the person then can contribute more.
Yeah, well, that's it. And I know where you're coming from, and I think what Avril spoke there about the tax relief system is one proposal and one idea. You know, because of the work on mum and many more like me, you know, you do look at your paycheck at the end of the week when you're, you know, paying all the bills. There's very, very little left.
And this is real life here from this texter.
You know?
We're a married couple. We've one child and we'd love nothing more than to have a second child, but we can't afford it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the sad reality of it, you know.
Okay, Cora, it's been fantastic having you in.
Thank you
so much. Cora Harvey, former mayor of Donegal, former county councillor as well, and now no time to spare person since she stepped away from the council. But it's been great to have you in.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and hopefully you'll be able to spare Saturday for us down the line as well. Okay, as we've been hearing, Lucinda Creighton says everyone in Ireland will be able to vote for a candidate from her new party at the next election. Yesterday, she unveiled plans for the new party, saying it will run candidates in every constituency. Financial commentator Eddie Hobbs is among the founders of the new party, which doesn't yet have a name. Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning, Greg. How's it going?
Not too bad at all. Is this something that interests you, being a member of this unnamed party?
Well, it's always interesting when you look and see somebody putting a new political party into the field in the country. And while I would wish the members of it well, I don't see myself as being a member of that particular group in any way. for the foreseeable future or ever.
What do you think of the concept, though? I mean, you say it's interesting to see people try something new, but is it a workable concept? Is it just really just more of the same, as many people would see it?
I would think so. I don't believe that what we need in this country is another political party. I think people have seen and learned from a better experience that political parties have done nothing but let the people down. Parties, I believe, become there to service the members of that party and service the party itself, which becomes more important and sidelines the people and the party is doing their business. So I don't think it would really be of much benefit to Irish society to have another political party who will come out and involve themselves in the same type of auction politics that we've seen over the years.
You are, of course, an independent, of course, so if more interest to you, perhaps, would be talk of this new grouping of independents, sort of not a party as such, but having some key goals and strategies moving forward. Are you in discussions in that regard, or is that something you're interested in?
Well, we have myself and a number of other independent TDs, Catherine Murphy, John Halligan, Finian McGrath, Maureen O'Sullivan, have established an independent network, which has about 17 county councillors as well affiliated to it. We did that last year, where we were hoping to start that conversation amongst independents about working together and agreeing a key number of policy platforms that we could work together on and build into the future on. Shane Ross, over the last number of months, appears to be going down the same line and promoting his idea for a loose alliance. But like anything, need to see what really the detail is of it and what the actual core principles and policies are that any grouping would want to be put forward before I would consider whether it would be something I would participate in or not.
Yeah, exactly. And Shane Ross is not dismissing the idea of this grouping of independents supporting a government. It could be a Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin government. If their goals and if their requests were met, that's not really what independent politics is, though, is it?
No, and I don't see that as what it would be about either, Greg. I think what if we're coming together to form alliances or groupings of independents, what we should looking at is participating, if not leading, the government. I don't see myself in the role of being the crutch for any government to keep a group of political parties in power. I don't think that's the role that independents should play. I think what we should be doing is trying to drive the political agenda and, if possible, leading the government, which, if the poll figures keep going the way they are, is quite likely in the future.
Is it likely, though, because even from your comments, they do vary somewhat from Shane Ross, is the difficulty with independents getting common ground, because obviously it's such a broad church?
Well, it's funny, like, I mean, I often hear people talk about the difficulty with parties like Sinn Féin, that everybody speaks from the same hand sheet. You know, so, I mean, what do people want? You know, what is necessary to have is to have diversity in politics and to have alternative views being put forward. And, you know, for a government to be successful in this country and under our system, they only need to win two votes in the Dáil every year, and that's the finance bill and the social welfare bill. That's all that needs to happen. But what we have in this country is we have governments that are completely obsessed with winning every single vote that takes place. So I would see that as independents participating in a government, you'll have a lot more debate, a lot more discussion, and a lot more openness taking place, and people clearly seeing where people's decisions make, and people would make the decision to vote on a principle rather than on the fact that they're going to lose a job or lose a patronage of a political party if they don't.
Because as we have it now, the party whip system, you know, it's very strictly adhered to, and as you've outlined the reasons why, perhaps, that it's not a very effective system, in that, you know, even there's very many really good politicians that are members of parties that never get to have their say because they can't really speak outside of the party line.
That's right. I mean, you look at the way things go at the moment, you hear the party members will say, oh, well, we'll get an opportunity at the parliamentary party meetings to have our say, but I mean, that never sees the light of day unless it's leaked to the media, and we don't see how policy formation takes place or how people arrive at decisions that a policy or a direction is the right way to go. And I think if you want to have the public and people buying into ideas and policy, they need to see how that's formulated and how it's worked through and how it's arrived at, and then people would be better able to buy into it and to accept it.
Finally, do you anticipate an election in 2015?
I think it's quite likely. I think possibly, and there's absolutely no reason to expect. My own speculation would be that I think the government will probably cut and run after the budget in October. And provided we don't have, or they don't have any banana skins between now and then that they trip up on.
Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle, thanks very much.
Thanks, Greg.